Accession number 27202, Colonel James Dowson, Rail 4. We're talking about the value of your Boy Scouts experience. Right. You wanted to expand on that a bit, because it was obviously valuable.
Yeah, I told you that I conformed very easily when I went to Queen Elizabeth Barracks. And some of that was because I'd already learned the value of conformation in the Scouts. And the Boy Scouts had did the first aid badge and learned to be self-reliant and learned how to look after myself, which I was easily able to apply, and it was very useful when I was dumped into this barrack room and initiated to basic training and so on. Took to it very easily. But the thing I was wanting to tell you, and it's really sort of to make my position clear, you were asking about attitudes towards the war and so on. Now, as I told you, I was very much a patriot and thought killing Germans was a great idea. But also, later on, as as time's gone by, I've reflected on this, and history being fed to us from various channels, and I thought to myself, and particularly when Helmut Kohl was revealed as being a member of Hitler Youth, I thought, you know, I'd have been a very ardent member of the Hitler Youth when I was, if I'd been a youth in Germany, because I much favoured this idea of the strength of organisations. Hence, the Boy Scouts reminded me. I was very much in favour, and still am, of the Boy Scouts, of the strength of an organisation to keep people together and keep people of one mind, and to persuade dissenters that dissent is not such a good idea.
So you could see that you could have been caught up with
very much. I have no doubt whatever that I would have been a very enthusiastic member of the Hitler Youth, because what was Hitler peddling? Hope, and you know, they needed hope, and they clove to it, and I would have done just the same.
Now, I don't know whether there's any more training you had that you can think of, either nursing or other types of training you did. But
we had 12 weeks training. The first basic training was involved in selection, and after that selection, you went about your allotted task. And you got various tasks which depended upon your appearance and abilities and how well you did. And so I was always able to turn out very well, and was, instead of being picked for kitchen detail and being made to clean tins in the tin shed, as it was called, I would concentrate on being as smart as could be, and I would be RSM's runner, which was a great job. You would sit in a room and just go errands for the RSM. It was a chap called Bryson, RSM Bryson. Great big sort of fat-bellied chap who was sparkling and smart and had a tremendous high-pitched, you know, those high-pitched voices of command on drill squares. And he would send, he had about three or four runners, which I always managed to, well, very frequently managed to get one, and you would run up and down to the sergeant's mess for cups of tea and sandwiches and things like that. All kinds of menial tasks, but a lot better than cleaning messy tins in the kitchen. So that was the sort of perk of conforming.
And tell us a bit about, we're always interested in preparing for kit inspections and cleaning uniforms,
right,
polishing boots, all the rest of this. Bull, in other words. Tell us how you went about it.
Dead easy. Did it straight away, to the best of my ability, and went to the NAFI. Didn't grumble about it, just got pitched straight into it.
Now, the boots, how would you clean it? How would you get the shine? Because there's competition. I mean, other people
spit
are trying.
And polish. Spit and polish. First of all, to get the as you know, the ammunition boots were had a lot of bobbles on the toe cap. And they were absolute beast to get off by the old-fashioned method was to use a toothbrush or some other hard object and gradually flatten them. But there was an enterprising chap who would come round and demonstrate his patented method for flattening toe caps, which was an iron and a tin of kiwi polish. On goes the polish, on goes the iron, sizzle, 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 flat toe cap. Polishes up a treat, glass, shine on it. And I paid my 1 and 6 or whatever it was, and he did it. It was highly illegal. If he was caught, he was punished.
But it worked.
It worked a treat. And that solved one problem straight away. The other was Blanco.
Now people don't know what Blanco is now, right, at all. It's a
cake of rather pasty-looking, hard paste. And you make it into a thick liquid, and you scrub it onto webbing. And when you do, it forms a kind of skin that gives it covers all the blemishes and makes webbing look neat. So you would do the brass bits of your webbing until they shone.
Using
Brasso or Duraglit or something like that. Duraglit was popular because it was all in this cotton, this moist cotton. And you'd do those, and then you'd do your Blanco, all the webbing. And there was different shades of Blanco depending on what you're in. And we had a certain shade that was the approved shade. And you did your gaiters and your belt and your webbing. Webbing didn't need to be done every day for Blanco because you didn't use it every day. But your belt you did every day, and your gaiters you did every day.
And would they dry? I mean, how
yeah, they're dry, all right. Gaiters had a brass buckle and a little leather strap. And you polished the leather strap, and you polished the brass buckle, and you Blancoed the rest of it. And then you put it around the bottom of your trousers, and you dropped the weights. And you had weights in the trousers, and they pulled the trousers down over the thing so it looked very smart. And then the boots on and a webbing belt, and that's all you wore for most of the day.
Was it still using the button stick, you know, and to polish
buttons? I never found a button stick all that useful, although we did have... there was button sticks, which was a slot, and that was useful. But all the other things that went round buttons and so on, they were all redundant by the time we got them. And you got those from the Neffy.
Would you have to lay out, having got your uniform right,
yeah,
were they still laying out the beds in
yes,
a highly stylized fashion?
Every day we had to lay out our beds in a formal style. The blankets, we got sheets. For the rest of the basic training we got sheets, and we got two blankets, two sheets, and this green thing which we retained. And you put the green thing around the outside, and the blankets and sheets were folded, and they went on the end of the bed, on the head of the bed, and the rest of the bed, you had your chest, the metal chest, at the bottom. I think that was you were allowed to keep that locked. Yes, you were. That was about all for a standard. Great coat. Steel helmet and various things arranged like a sort of bit like a sort of triptych at the top of the bed, you know. Greatcoat, steel helmet, and something else, one on each side. And that all had to look exactly right.
And what was a kit inspection like? Or a room inspection? You know, a bed?
Room inspection, the company officer, whose name was Rump, Major Rump, and the company sergeant major, who was called Callahan, would come round and they would destroy a bed that didn't come up to standard, so you knew straight away if you were in trouble.
By this?
Just tip it up, yeah. And you would be out, you see, when you come back, there was the bed tipped up, and you go and report to the company office and receive admonishment and suitable punishment. That was pretty well standard. There were other kit inspections where you had to stand by your beds. Everyone knows this. They've done it in national service. The room corporal would shout out, "Stand by your beds!" Everyone stand by the beds. Sour faced sergeant major would go around scowling at everything, go right up. There was a bit of brinkmanship, I'm sure he would, and he was quite a nice chap actually. But he would make everyone feel terrified until he passed them on to go to the next one. Great sigh of relief. which hadn't got to be too audible, otherwise you're in trouble with that as well. And that would be sometimes, it wasn't every day, I'm sure it wasn't every day, but there was a full kit inspection, and that was really quite trying. You had to lay out your kit according to a prescribed pattern, including folding the socks in particular ways so that they didn't look lumpy. They had to look like exact rectangles with a neat fold in them. And you put them all out on this green blanket. And once again, the paste stick would flick them up if they were unsatisfactory.
What about the cleanliness of the room? I mean, were they still doing this business of bumping up the
floor? Yes, every day. And there was a polished strip, black polish, and two strips, and the beds all had to match exactly. And they would. The barrack room had to look completely pristine by the time we went on parade after breakfast. So we had a short period before breakfast and a short period after breakfast when we could get it all ready. Make sure the fire buckets were clean and no tab ends in the sand and things like that.
Now, you went along with all this, what they call
absolutely.
You just knuckled down. That was mm-hmm. your approach.
Yeah, and gave him a lot more free time than the others. Anyone who grumbled was wasting his time, because there's no point in grumbling. You still had to conform. You could grumble and conform, or you could not grumble and conform, which meant if you conformed without grumbling, you had more time in the naffy drinking tea and flirting with a girl.
Now, what about how did you get on with the other lads? The other
right. Generally speaking, quite well. I made one or two friends, and one or two enemies.
Now, what would cause you to go which way with it? I mean, what would you look
friends
for? Friends
would be from similar school background. I think if we found something in common, and we could talk about it, and or share. A goal like getting sufficiently well dressed to be allowed an extra furlough in Aldershot or somewhere like that. We'd go to that Valhalla of the Naffy Club in Aldershot. Everything was marvellous, and you could really believe that your fingernails weren't all cracked and broken with blanco.
So you look for people with a similar background.
Yes,
mostly. What about people you didn't like? I mean, or enemies? I mean, would they pick on you?
Actually,
there's
one that's fairly ambivalent. There was a Scotsman who joined us a bit late with the squad. He came. I wasn't quite sure at first why he came a bit late. They filled in the. There were two vacancies in our barrack room, two Scots lads. One was very vocal, Glasgow chap. Big, strong, loud-mouthed, and he was a bit of a rebel, but fairly likable, and he didn't mind. He rode all the punches, and you know, from all the criticism and so on, he could almost give as good as he got, and he didn't mind constantly being persecuted. He could take it, and he was. I remember we had the odd. Barrack room equivalent of what in public school would be a pillow fight and so on, and this was just really to settle petty scores, but it wasn't very vicious or dangerous, but it was a bit of rough and tumble, and I would stand up to him and he came for me, and this was in the dark, and he raised his hands with something that was a bit heavier than a pillow. I don't know what it was, but when he did, I had a gym shoe in my hand, and I could see him against the outline of the window. It was in the dark, but the window was just enough light, I could see him, so I raised his hand and I hit him hard underneath in both armpits, and this hurt him clearly quite a lot. He retired. But he was biding his time, and I remember he towards the end of our period, there was a certain relaxation of naffy privileges, and he managed to get himself drunk. And our barrack room had an entrance from the rest of the spider, But at the end, which is where I slept, there was quite a fair drop. Higher than a man. He could reach it like that, the emergency exit, you see. And this night, I remember, he was sort of thumping on the door, and I opened it, and there was this chap, and he was trying to get in, and he was succeeding. He said, "Where's Dawson? I'll kill him." But he was too drunk, fortunately. So we put him to bed, wrapped him in a sheet, and made sure he couldn't get out, and he slept it off. And we developed a sort of friendship after that, because he wasn't so drunk that he couldn't remember that he was treated reasonably. And I got to talking to him, and found out that when he joined the army, he couldn't read. And that was why he joined late. He'd been sent to a class where he could learn to read. And he was a bright guy, too.
Did you find some of them too stupid for you? I mean,
Oh, yes. There were plenty that were a bit thick, and I didn't associate it with them. There was no point, really. I had nothing in common with them. But this guy, he was very ill-educated, but he was bright, and, you know, we spotted it with each other, and we could talk, we got friends.
Now, what about the NCOs, the instructors? Mm. What were they like? What were their methods like? And how did you get on with them?
We had a Welsh corporal who was a rugby player, played rugby for the RAMC, and he was also an aspiring medical student. And he had a kind of dissociation. He could be the drill corporal, and he could be just a friendly guy, and he would do that. And he would, and if someone would step out of line, he would say, "Oh, come on, you know, you've got to do it this way this time." And then the promise was that when all that was over, he would come and sit and chat with us in the evening, and we'd talk about all sorts of things, you know, sort of things that we, our hopes and all that's our backgrounds. And he was just an ordinary guy.
What about the others, the NCOs?
Oh, there were some sadistic buggers, yes, who enjoyed it. But we were very much allocated this chap. He was more or less the guy in charge of us all the time. So we were passed on to people that we only experienced for half a day. And you could very easily distance yourself from them. And, you know, there were the inevitable contacts, but you could rejoice in the fact that you didn't have to put up with them for 10 weeks.
And no swearing anywhere?
Very little. Very little. I mean, there was coarse language, but it wasn't anything like as liberal and frequent as it is now.
And did you have much contact with your officers at all during the training period, or were they sort of a distance?
They were non-medical officers. They all come up through the ranks as RAMC, so they weren't medically qualified. And I remember, again, they showed their human face towards the end. At first they were distant and established the sort of pecking order. But after a while, they could, once they got to know you, they would let you get to know them. And I'll give you some examples. I remember I was scrubbing the floor, and I can remember saying something about hoping that it would satisfy the RSM, the CSM, in terms that implied criticism of him and his demanding too high standards. And a voice just by my left ear said, "Well, it's getting on that way," and he'd been listening to me, you see. But he didn't explode in fury or anything at my criticism. He just joined in and said, "Okay, yes." I suppose he realised that I was trying to come up to his standards and was just expressing a certain grumbling, I suppose, which is unusual for me, grumbling about the standard being much higher than I thought was necessary in order to keep a clean
back. So these are warrant officers, not real officers.
Yes, there was Major Rump, who was an ex-warrant officer, of course, but he'd got a commission, it's a quartermaster commission type of thing. Major Rump, I remember, I was sent up from the barrack square by CSM Callaghan, haircut, report to the company office, actually, to be admonished and then go for a haircut. And I said to Major Rump, "I'm sorry, sir, I don't have sixpence," which is what it cost to have a haircut. And this was, must have been fairly late on, and Major Rump said, "Here you are, lad." Gave me sixpence. They give you some idea what they were like.
So fairly benign, really.
Oh, yes. There was nothing very sadistic about them.
Now, tell me about the Naffy, because that's obviously the nirvana or something. Yeah. Something you looked forward to. What did the Naffy offer?
It was, I think it was, at first, for, I mean, it depended on the, they'd offer you tea, snacks, cigarettes, soft drinks. Wasn't a wet Naffy. At least not while we were doing our basic training. At the end of the basic training, I think they were allowed to sell you liquor. But during the basic training, there was no alcoholic drinks of any sort offered for sale at the Naffy.
So what was so good about it?
It was just getting away. It was warm and friendly, and there were girls there you could talk to.
Were they the waitresses? Or
yeah, the waitresses. Mm-hmm. But they were friendly sort. I mean, it was, I mean, I suppose there were liaisons formed. I never did anything else except sort of mild flirting with them.
Was there games there, of darts?
Yes,
things like that.
Darts and billiards and snooker. The snooker table and darts. That was about it, really. There was Shove Ha'penny. We played Shove Ha'penny. Got very skillful at it.
And what about going into Aldershot? You mentioned, you know, what would
you do weren't allowed to go into Aldershot until you'd earned sufficient merit. And that has come up to a required standard. And once you got up to that, it was an incentive, I suppose. It was made perfectly plain that if you got up to the required standard, you would be allowed certain days off. And so you worked for that. It was the carrot.
What did you do in Aldershot when you went into town?
Went to the Naffy Club, which had music and carpets and plush chairs. And the same sort of things, except rather more luxurious surroundings. Oh, and there would be dancing as well. I couldn't dance, didn't dance, but you could dance with girls.
And was that your main thing you did?
Also, it was a wet Naffy that you could have drink, but I didn't drink at that time.
Were you teetotal or did you just not
teetotal
drink?
At that time. And I mean, it never occurred to me to drink at that time. Never occurred to me at all.
What about, so you wouldn't go to pubs?
No, never.
Anything else you'd do in Aldershot? I mean, was the cinema a popular
place? Yes, there was a cinema. Mm. And that was really it. Go to the Naffy Club, wait until the cinema opened, go to the cinema and get the three-tonner home.
Was there any trouble between the local lads and the army? I mean, Aldershot.
Not that
army.
I was aware of, but there were MPs around all over the place, and they were very keen on making sure you were properly dressed. In fact, I was admonished because I had a button of my breast pocket undone, spotted from across the street. Come here, lad. Yes, you are improperly dressed. And he sort of flicked the thing up. Actually, I don't know how he spotted it, because it was a Canadian battle dress and the buttons were covered.
Now, anything else about your base training? You'd arrived in April and you were there till, on your basic training,
12 weeks.
So till July-ish.
Mm, yes.
And what happened then? Was there an assessment or a finishing?
You were posted. And
there was no passing out then, or
there was a passing out parade.
Do you remember that at all?
Yes, it was all done. It was all drill. There were no arms drill. It was all sort of movement of squads and so on. And it was competitive. And there was a winning squad. And there wasn't the sort of worst squad. I can't remember that. But all squads that didn't win, which was all except one, were looked upon with derision and scorn by the winning squad. So it was all, you know, fairly good natured.
And did your squad win?
I can't remember. It's strange. I was just thinking though when I was telling you, I can't remember.
And what happened?
I think we came second.
So the pass it out parade. And what happened then? I mean, we posted.
Yes. Was it posted? This was when there was a certain amount of freedom and you could come and go as you wished until such time as you were posted. And that took place fairly quickly. I can remember I had then been in communication with school friends, a chap called Fimister, who had been a particular school friend. He went into the intelligence corps. And he was posted to Cyprus, which I thought was tremendously attractive. So I went up to see if I could be posted to Cyprus. And on my way to the company office, they said, "You're posted." So I was defeated without even asking the question.
Now, where were you posted to?
I was posted to Hindhead in Surrey. No, I wasn't. I was posted to Farnborough. But not Farnborough in Kent, Farnborough in Dorset.
I think there's one near Aldershot.
No, not Farnborough. Oh God, no, it's Farnborough, Aldershot, and Hindhead in Surrey. It's
not Blandford.
No, Cambridge Military Hospital. It was near Mere.
It was a Cambridge Military Hospital.
No, it wasn't a Cambridge Military Hospital. It was a military hospital. Shaftesbury Military Hospital in Dorset. Shaftesbury Military Hospital in Dorset is where I was posted.
And that would be still July, would it? Or would it? Would it?
Yes, it'd be July. In fact, it must have been July. It certainly couldn't have been later, and I'll tell you why in a minute. I want to go back to RSM's runner. I met a chap there who was also RSM's... he was a drill instructor, and we shared the same accommodation during the working day, and his name was David Fletcher, and he and I subsequently went to the same medical school and shared years together, same year in medical school. But that's where I first met him, and he was a parson, a minister's son, and he was the only person I knew who could and did string an enormous number of obscenities together in his speech.
And this is where you first met him?
That's where I first met him. And then we always parted because he went on administering drill instruction to new recruits and I was posted to Shaftesbury Military Hospital in Dorset. And when I got there, it was, again, it was really quite amazing because I suddenly found a new world. The world of the barracks was spiders, drill, washing, cleaning, running here and there, doing everything as I was told, whereas at Shaftesbury Military Hospital, it was just a working day. Admittedly, you had to start early and it had a certain amount of sort of military sheen on it in that you had to buff the wards and all that sort of thing, but it was just ordinary nursing. In an ordinary sort of way, in a military hospital. And in addition, instead of living in a barrack room, there were some old VAD quarters